For July 17th, 2015, we talk about Jaeger being kicked off of Dead Island 2, running with rifles, and we ask you about your favorite video game music. Welcome to the 112th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
Good to
welcome
be back.
Yeah. And a hearty welcome back to the listeners. Hey, can I plug something?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I want the listeners to pay attention to this. So a friend of the show and a friend of the network, Allison Baker, has a creation up on the Lego Ideas Center or whatever. It is a micro-scale Lego version of Mist Island.
That's pretty awesome.
And I created an account specifically to vote for that, and I will never use the account again unless there's an opportunity to vote for it again.
Yes. So what I want people to do, there'll be a link in the show notes. This needs 10,000 votes to get made, right? Like this could be something that is considered for large scale Lego production. Go and take a look at this in the show notes, or do a Google for Lego. It is micro scale Mist Island. Sign up for an account. I know it's kind of a bummer to have to do that, but it is totally worth it because I want to show support for this and I want it to have a chance of getting made. Tell your friends. Tell people who love Lego. I think this is a match made in heaven in terms of creating whole worlds. Like, that really lines up with Mist, and it's really well done. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a nostalgic tour in Lego. So go check it out.
And if you want to see more of Allison's work, you can actually look at our Facebook page where she did our profile picture.
Yes, I have that. You guys know that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, and also...
Question.
Lego. Yeah?
Question, does the tree move up and down in the Lego set?
I don't know. There are no GIFs of this. I would have to ask her.
All right.
Yeah. But this is one of those...
GIFs?
I guess.
Sorry.
I don't know. It's Schrodinger's GIF.
I say Jives.
Yeah, Jives.
Yeah,
I want to say eye. Actually, like, it's most popular is GIF, but the creator says it should be GIF,
which is why I said GIF. But this is not a discussion I'm willing to have right now.
Sorry, I'm easily distracted.
Yeah,
we won't put a pin in that. We'll put a bullet in that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I assume if you light the stray on fire, it'll move up and down as you do. I wonder where the match is. Oh my gosh. I want to paste a little note where you find the note to Atrus. Yeah. So this is really cool. Check it out.
It's really badass.
I know, right? So go there, support that. I want the Level Nation to rise in force and help get the word out about this. How's everybody else doing? Any anecdotes prior to the body of the show?
I didn't know we had a nation.
We do. You know,
I'm
they're
just excited to be talking about what I've been playing.
Oh yeah. Well, we've got a late start tonight, so why don't we jump into it? Cool. So we've got the regular kind of show for you. We got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video game news. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer first?
I've got an interesting one. I don't really know what to make of this yet, but I saw the developer Jaeger is not going to be continuing with Dead Island 2 anymore. So Jaeger notably.
Sorry.
Is it swapped or swooped? The swinging thing?
Swapped.
Okay.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Haha, got it. So David, we will tag team this story then. But Jaeger is I think best known for their work on Spec Ops The Line, mm-hmm. which is just an amazing example of what games can be. Mm-hmm. I was actually a little bit surprised when I saw, oh, hey, you know, Dead Island 2 is going to be the next thing that they're working on. But there's really no details out there yet on why or what happened or, what each of them are going to do moving forward. Deep Silver is the publisher and then Jaeger is the developer.
Right.
But yeah, apparently Jaeger is not going to be continuing to work on that. So they've got another game that is in development called Dreadnought, which is like ship combat on a massive scale.
We've talked about it.
And not by meaning a lot of ships. It is like a massive scale as in the ships are really big.
Mm-hmm. When you say ships, you mean like spaceships?
Spaceships, yes. Excuse me. Yes.
Okay.
So so they've, you know, they've got that to work on. I'm sure someone will pick up Dead Island 2. But maybe, David, you could provide some commentary on whether or not we should have been excited for Dead Island 2 in the first place.
Yeah, I was reading the Polygon article. I really enjoyed their take on discussing the initial trailer where they, you know, say, you can check out Blow, though it's unclear how much the final game will resemble this.
Well, yeah, it's a cinematic trailer.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, the Dead Island series, that's kind of been a thing, is them making the, you know, previous trailers implying that, you know, this is going to be, you know, a fairly Walking Dead-esque, like, you know, zombie thing that actually cares about story. Right. And then the game's not so much. So, yeah, yeah. I would say I think Jaeger dodged a bullet on this.
That is my sentiment as well, is, you know, it's like, I would probably rather see Jaeger working on Dreadnought and putting their full heart behind that, which is kind of something that it seems like is more their baby than just kind of a big name franchise that they got pulled onto. But at the same time, I can't imagine it's good for the studio to lose this kind of business, if you want to call it that way,
yeah.
And you know, survive. So hopefully they can survive this and go on to make more stuff, because I definitely want to see more stuff from Jaeger.
I mean, so two things there. The first of which is this kind of split makes it harder. I mean, it stands to reason that this kind of split would make it harder for a studio or developer to work with other publishers. The second, mm-hmm. kind you of mean, go, well, go ahead.
In because it gives them a bad rap.
Kind of, yeah. Like, it just, you know, we just got finished, you know, thinking and talking a lot about L.A. Noire on Watch Out for Fireballs, and like, that is, I'm not comparing Jaeger to Team Bondi, but like, that, like, that team dissolved because nobody would work with them ever again after Rockstar severed ties because they were difficult to work sure. with. So like, this is not a good thing for a studio that we like. The other thing is, it, you know, if we knew that they had something like Spec Ops: The Line in them before they made Spec Ops, like, they came to Spec Ops as, you know, with that series just being the most generic military shooter you ever could have seen. Like, it was totally out of left field that they took this kind of nothing series and turned it into something that, you know, at least we hold in high esteem and think that, you know, a bunch of people could play. Like, I hope that their work on Dead Island 2 at least kind of survives through. Maybe they were like, there was difficulty executing on their vision or whatever, but if somebody comes in and picks that up and turns this into something good, maybe Dead Island 2 will be better for it.
I could see that. I think that's fair.
I hadn't thought about it from that angle, yeah.
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 Yes. So it's the video game equivalent of Ant-Man for me right now, where it's like half of it's probably really good, but I don't know if all of it will be really good.
Wait a minute. Edgar Wright's involved in Dead Island 2?
No. Wires crossed. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I saw this too. This broke just like a half hour before we started recording too.
Oh, is it that recent? Okay.
It's pretty recent. It's fairly recent.
Huh.
Yeah. Let's see here, Ben, how about you? You got a story?
I have a story that broke about a half a week before we started recording this. But it's hardly a news story. It's more a speculative story, but, the voice actor in Metal Gear Solid on the Japanese version of it, tweeted last week, kind of indicating that the production company behind the game will be disbanded after this game is released. And his exact words were, "Even as if this is the last time, Metal Gear Solid lives forever." So kind of another ominous sort of sign that maybe this will be the last Metal Gear game, at least in the format of a console game. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is that this coincides with Konami removing all kind of mentions of Kojima. Mm-hmm. From even the cover art, like, they'd done that on trailers that came out after the less than amicable split. Here they're trying to erase his involvement with the Phantom Pain. So That's curious.
And I think technically he is still on the development team. He's still working for Konami.
Yeah.
It's just that, yeah, it's very speculative that it might be done as soon as the game comes out. But yeah, who knows?
I mean, he's been saying he's had one foot in the grave, not in the grave, but like one foot out of this for a long time. And like there is an interpretation of Metal Gear Solid 4 that is he was making it under protest and trying as hard as he could to make it as unappealing to people who wanted him to do this and continue that story as possible. And I say this as somebody who likes Metal Gear Solid 4. That's just a theory that I've seen put out there and stuff that I've seen, like, references to his interviews for it. So it wouldn't be surprising to me, even without this split, that we would see very little of kind of the mainline story. Although I want to see more Revengeance. I want to see Platinum do Rising again. But
yeah, I've actually got a news story about that.
Oh, okay. You picked it up?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's segue.
All right. Apparently there has been some speculation about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance and what the studio, Platinum Games, is going to do next. And I guess their, was it their CEO? I'm not seeing right now. What someone for there
it's,
is...
It's their lead creative director.
Lead creative director has tweeted that he wants to make a game based on the anime Kill la Kill, which I have no idea about other than I think I normally hear good things about it.
It's held in high regard.
Berserk.
Ah, fuck yes.
Yes, exactly. Or Berserk, which I understand is kind of a game that Bonfire Side Chats or a anime Bonfire Side Chats covered.
Yeah, Berserk is fucking great.
It's
really good. It's super gory, and we covered it on Bonfire Side Chat because there is DNA with the Soul series. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me, kind of with their emphasis on combat and with what they did with Metal Gear Rising and the swordplay, because Berserk's protagonist is kind of all about the cutting shit up. So
cutting and the slicing
with the cut. Oh man, the Cosby impersonation is not appropriate anymore. I've got to remove that arrow from my quiver. Yeah. So why were you drawn to the story, David?
A combination. Like, even I don't know if this is weird. I've never played Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, but I kind of like it just because of what it is. And I don't know. It's a game I haven't played, but I've enjoyed watching, like, Let's Plays and stuff like that a lot.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, Berserk caught my eye with its, you know, relation to the Soul series and to the network.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I saw that and I was like, beat still my heart. Like, I hope I'm a little bit annoyed is the wrong word, but like dismayed that their next game is a Transformers game. I know that is some people's bag, but not mine.
Yeah. Although, I definitely see what you're saying. Although my understanding is like most of the Transformers games have actually been pretty good is my understanding.
The Cybertron ones have. Yeah. The ones that are tied in with the movies, I've heard not so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Cybertron one that I played.
The one that was like the Gears of War?
Yeah, essentially. Gears of War, where you could transform into a tank at any time.
Yep. Like the Batmobile.
Oh, God. I don't know if that's a good comparison.
Batman can transform into the Batmobile?
Yep. It's a cross-licensing deal. Yeah. I don't know. Platinum. I like that studio a lot. So...
Have they done anything other than Revengeance and Transformers that is been well known?
Bayonetta, God Hand, Mighty.
Okay.
Mighty
that's
Nine,
what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Whatever the one of the Wii U exclusive things was, they came out of like Clover. They did Mad World as well. It's like a bunch of good shit.
Actually, the same team behind God Hand did Bayonetta.
Yep.
I really need to give Bayonetta another chance because I think I would like it. I bounced off it so hard that it's going to take a lot to get me to come back to it.
If you end up getting that Wii U, I'll lend it to you.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll be honest. I'm really getting pretty close to getting a Wii U.
Yeah, it's really good.
I really want to play Splatoon, or mm-hmm. however that's pronounced.
Yeah.
And Bayonetta also looks good.
Yeah. I'm nursing a straight up game boner for Mario Maker, you guys.
I haven't heard of that. Man. What's that?
It's coming out in September. It is a level editor for Mario games that lets you make levels in either Mario 1, Mario 3, Super Mario World, or New Super Mario Brothers visuals or mechanics. And it lets you do just like crazy bug nuts, tripping balls, hard stuff. And so I want to play what I want is an infinite font of curated Mario levels.
That actually sounds amazing. Do you remember the Mario game and level editor for the TI-83?
Yes. Fuck yeah. Fuck yes, I do. Yes.
Yes. This sounds amazing in all its forms.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a day one purchase for me, for sure.
Does it let you do secret exits?
I hope so. I mean, God, why would you put the Mario World font stuff in there if you couldn't? like seriously, look up some demos, like especially of the stuff they did at their E3 events or at the Nintendo World Championships or whatever. Some of the levels
I watched the finals of that, I think, and it looked phenomenal.
Yeah, like doing crazy stuff, like stuff that's kind of borderline like anti-chamber stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was this like I've seen previously YouTube videos where it's like levels where there's like no point in the level where you can touch the ground, you just have to keep like ricocheting off of enemies and like suiciding your Yoshi and things like that?
I mean, that's like ROM hack stuff, and ROM hacks are kind of some bullshit because the community around that values difficulty over everything else, like over kind of more interesting ideas that are not trying to kill you.
Says the person who does a Dark Souls podcast.
The difficulty in Dark Souls is overrated. and also
you only say that because you've been playing it for 4 years.
Well, no, also it's the least appealing thing about the series for me. So
yeah, I've got to agree with Cole on this one. It's challenge, not difficulty.
Yeah. But also like it is possible in the ROM hack community for somebody to just put out some unplayable bullshit and call it, you know, the best thing ever, whereas from what I understand, they're using a really sensible heuristic that I've seen in other kind of like make your own level kind of stuff, where you actually have to beat your own level before you can publish it.
Oh yeah, Little Big Planet's the first time I can think of that being a thing.
I kind of have mixed feelings on that though, because I feel like, you know, they good at playing Mario and good at building Mario doesn't have to necessarily go together.
Yeah. I wouldn't
understand the other side of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust a computer algorithm to determine whether or not a Mario level was beatable.
That's true.
Yeah. I've got one quick story that I'm going to do. This is really minor. This is like a month old, but I just saw it today. Everybody who's gone to the Rapture has a release date.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's coming out August the 11th, I believe, on the PS4, maybe on the PC as well. But this is the new game by the Chinese Room, the guys who did the people who did the De-Resser and Amnesia: Machine for Pigs. Actually, no, it's only on PS4. So, bully for me.
Huh.
yeah, I'm excited about that. It's part of like whatever Sony's equivalent of the Xbox Summer of Arcade is, where you can like pre-order it and get like 20% off of it. But this looks really cool, what I've seen of it, although I admit that I haven't watched an awful lot of coverage because I want to be surprised.
I've got to be honest, when you led with that, I couldn't help but think of the like 2012 Rapture people. Mm-hmm. It's like the Rapture's got a release date, guys.
It'd be funny if they just kept on delaying it. No, I've seen some like gameplay footage of this. It looks really beautiful. Like, I don't know what kind of game it's going to be. It's probably going to be a really pretty place to walk around in and see a bunch of, you know, abandoned spaces and personal archaeology, which is one of my favorite things to do in a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be like Dear Esther, but, you know, a game. Hopefully.
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, well, not hopefully. I like Dear Esther. So whatever they do, keep on doing it well.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. I'm so used to people shitting on Dear Esther that it's like, I don't know. I feel defensive about it. Huh.
No, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
So this is probably going to be an extra large multiplayer because it is about a topic that is near and dear to my heart. And Dennis, I know it is to yours because you asked the question. And apparently it is to our listeners as well because we got a pretty big response. So we apologize if we don't dwell on any individual answer for too long because we want to see this. Because Dennis, what are we asking them about?
We're asking them about video game music, you know, what their favorite soundtracks are, and then if they listen to them apart from the game.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to go through these, and I want everybody to have a pen and paper ready because I think everybody's lives will benefit from having more video game music in their lives. So, gosh, that was a shitty sentence, and I'm sorry. So I'm going to do some penance by getting us started with Carlo, who writes in saying, "Journey by a Country Mile." That's not the title of the game. That's a journey and then by a country mile.
Is a country mile longer or shorter than an actual mile?
I think a New York minute is shorter, so a New York mile would be shorter as well. So a country mile would be longer, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know.
What about a country minute?
I believe that it's, I don't know. Can you convert from metric time to country time?
That.
I'm on island time right now. I'm still kind of on vacation mode.
Well, I think it depends on what country.
Man, we are doing terrible at doing this quickly. But anyway.
Halfway through one.
Journey, comma, by a country mile. And by a country mile is not the artist. Austin Wintory is. But I just want to make sure I'm absolutely clear on that sentence. Okay, can we go ahead? Okay. Mm-hmm. Journey by a Country Mile. That game is like an interactive album. Honorable mention to Dead Space, which is not listenable apart from the game, but does a great job of making you uncomfortable. Also, Dennis, you asked if people listen to this music outside of the game. So.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not aware of the Dead Space soundtrack. Most of it was like hull creaking. So I probably would want to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, you as someone who appreciates like Silent Hill and the like.
I like Silent Hill soundtrack because it's like a bunch of wacky guitar and then like radio static.
Huh.
Yeah. I have to say,
it's like a Queens of the Stone
Age. I'm just going to probably interject a couple randomly throughout this. In terms of hall creaking, even though it's not music, I always have had a special place in my heart for the ambient sound effects in the first Fear game.
Oh yeah.
The weird, like, wait, what is it? It's like a hydraulic saw or something they use, hydro saw to make the noises.
Oh, are you talking about the water saw?
Yeah. I want to say it's something like that is what they actually use to make all the weird, like,
yeah,
ambient, but yeah.
Good stuff. Let's hear, David, what's Jala say?
Jala says, a chunk of what I listen to is video game music. Boss battle themes in particular are great workout music, especially when you speed up the beats per minute. Some
official soundtracks.
Original soundtracks I listen to frequently. Lunar 2, Eternal Blue, Planescape Torment, Contrast, Mega Man / Rockman and the remixes, Bastion, Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind, Dot Hack, and Guilty Gear.
Yeah. The Morrowind soundtrack has like 3 songs on it. Although it is nice and soothing, a lot of it, and also rousing as well.
Well, that's your opinion.
What?
I learned something about Cole today.
What?
I actually have no idea if it's actually arousing or not, but
I'm not saying arousing. I'm saying rousing. Like, you know, the main theme from Elder Scrolls is
a rousing soundtrack.
Yes, it is.
I heard you describing it as a rousing.
Nope, rousing. No.
I was going to let it slide.
Let's hear, Ben, what's Franz say?
Franz says Arcanum of Steamworks, and Magic Obscura features an hour of slow, sad violins. It's really atmospheric and goes perfectly with the game, but it's dreadful when listened to in isolation. At work, I tend to listen to soundtracks from Deus Ex, Planescape Torment, and The Wolf Among Us. Great music that drowns out the chatter from my colleagues, but doesn't get in the way of my thoughts.
Amen, brother.
And then Franz goes on to say that he forgot to mention Bastion, Sword and Sorcery, and Darkest Dungeon. All three are great for having in the background while doing graphic design.
Yeah, Darkest Dungeon has a sweet Darkest soundtrack.
Dungeon is amazing, but I don't know how anyone... Like, I really like the music on its own, but it's so freaking, like, heavy and depressing. I don't know how I could ever listen to it when I was trying to do something.
I mean, it sets a mood.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, if I was trying to, like... I don't know, like, if I was doing something that needed that sort of feel, yeah, definitely. But
yeah,
it is great music.
Yeah. Dennis, what's Timothy say?
Timothy says, there are tons that I love, but the first to immediately pop into my head when I read this was Chrono Trigger. I admit a lot of that is just due to nostalgia, but Frog's theme still gets me every time I hear it.
Even as like a middle schooler, I loved like that really kind of like lilting, kind of soft, kind of wussy in a way, the wind song from that, like whatever plays when you're in 600 AD. It's weird that they measure time by AD in that series.
also AD 600. Sorry.
Okay, sorry. But anyway, yeah, Chrono Trigger is great. Chrono Cross as well is one that I would recommend. But Timothy probably knows that. David says, Final Fantasy VI, or 3 in the US, has some of my all-time favorite music. If I think about game music, Terra's theme is the first to come to mind. My most recent listens have been the Sunless Sea soundtrack and the Final Fantasy XIV OSTs.
Oh, the Sunless Sea, particularly the one that the like kind of main one that's like I think like waters near or like kind of deep open waters is amazing. Like it's really epic.
I haven't played enough
actually,
of it to get a sense of
it. Not that epic. It's kind of anyways, sorry.
let's see here. David, what does Tom say?
Tom says, my nostalgia answer is Ultima 7 from the heady MIDI days of 1992. Booting main theme, a ton of music for every kind of situation with dynamic switching between tracks and a memorable rendition of Stones, a tune composed by one of your in-game companions that was an important plot point in an earlier game. That's kind of cool. Fun side note, the Ultima 7 soundtrack was actually released on CD with music from Ultima 7 Part 2 and the Flight Sim Strike Commander. One of these things is not like the others. MIDI game soundtracks sold in actual record stores in 1993. Who believe it these days? He says, goes on to say, more recently, I love all the individual tracks in the Hotline Miami soundtrack, but some of them are fantastic, and all of them mesh perfectly with the queasy neon visuals and journal mood of the game. The tracks by Sun Ural and Moon are standouts.
Fantastic synth work in that. Like, they're like just such good stuff. Like, that is great music even outside of Hotline Miami.
Is it cool? Do they go for kind of the 80s vibe, or is it chiptune-y? Or
I mean, the fact that it's kind of like synth based, and I guess so. Yeah, it's not Big Crush, so it wouldn't be chiptune-y at all, but it's more just like leaning on the psychedelia side of it.
Okay,
a little bit.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Like Sun Ra is the sound of drugs. So
yeah.
Let's see here, Ben, what's Sean say?
Sean says, World of Warcraft has some beautiful songs in it. However, I will speak for my son. He loves the special edition soundtrack he got with his Kirby game. The Kirby soundtrack is well suited to the boards, and I really get a kick out of listening to it. Also, Kirby's Epic Yarn is the first game he beat.
Aw, Kirby's Epic Yarn is great. Love that game. Man, the soundtrack to Kirby Superstar is awesome. Like some just tremendous remixes of the general Kirby theme. Speaking of Hal, yeah, Sotaro Iwata, rest in peace. Like that wasn't in the brief, yeah. But that sucks. He was incredibly young, and he had a lot to offer still.
Yeah, it seemed like a really really classic guy.
Yeah, kind of single handedly responsible for Earthbound being made. I mean, aside from the author, like he was very integral in its creation. I suppose would be the more tactful way to put it. Yeah.
No one can say that he didn't do well with the time he was given.
Yeah. Yep. Touched a lot of people's lives and did good stuff. So, womp. But yeah, Kirby music, also really good. Dennis, what's Kylo say? Or Kilo?
Kylo says, let's just call him Pascal.
Okay.
Much easier. What's up, man? I like the Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles or Tales of Symphonia soundtracks for when I'm working. The music has enough variation to pull me out of the drudgery of my job. If I'm feeling really bored, I bust out a 16-bit soundtrack like Mega Man X or Sonic & Knuckles. Oh, man, Sonic & Knuckles. To pick me up. I've tried listening to Bloodborne a few times, but remembering the fights makes me too tense and twitchy.
Same thing with Dark Souls. I don't know how people could listen to the Dark Souls soundtrack without having a reaction.
Yeah, am I the only one that some of these songs, like, you know, you play, say, the boss encounter for whatever enough times, and usually the first time you have to dodge is about at the same point in the song each time, or the music each time. So now whenever I hear it, I get to that point, and immediately my brain goes, dodge!
It's kind of like why I can't take a song that I like and make it into a ringtone. Like, okay, sure. Hearing the main piano riff from No Children by the Mountain Goats still gives me shivers because it triggers my social anxiety. Oh no, somebody wants to talk to me. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right there, David. Like, a lot of those are timed to it, and it reminds you of a very tense situation. Huh. Let's see. I'm going to pick up with Matt, who writes, "In Turrican 2, main theme has long been a favorite of mine. In more modern times, EVE Online has some lovely tracks, very atmospheric and suited to the beautiful in-game scenery." I don't know of EVE Online's soundtrack at all, but I imagine it's going to be similar to FTL's, and I want to say probably cool, but that is a baseless assumption.
From what I remember of it, I played it a little bit, it's real... Maybe this is me projecting on the game because the game kind of does this well, but it's real big on kind of the lonely type of thing.
Yeah. Hmm.
Space is lonely?
Let's see here. David, what does Nick say?
Nick Basile says, "When I have schoolwork to do and can't concentrate because it's too quiet, I turn on the Earthbound original soundtrack and let it play in the background. It's full of standouts, but I never got sick of the Onet theme. It's just sublime."
Yeah, the Earthbound theme did really good in the Soundtrack Showdown.
Oh, yeah? What wound up winning that?
That was Final Fantasy VI.
Aha. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, a worthy one. I thought Seven was going to take it, but I believe it fell to Earthbound, actually. So. Yeah. Let's hear Ben. What's Allison say?
Allison says, "The Myst series has always had some of the most atmospheric and haunting music. Nothing gets me more pumped up quite like the opening theme to the original Myst."
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why she would be thinking about Myst.
Maybe she was listening to it while she was making
that
something.
She's a fan.
Oh, that is so good. Please go support that. I really, really want that to get the attention it deserves. Let's see here. No, definitely. And the Myst music actually just gets better as it goes on. The Riven soundtrack is pretty good as well. In fact, those first two were, I believe, composed by Robin Miller, who was just there in the studio and did that great music. But even like Myst 5, which I think was not Peter Gabriel, but somebody whose last name is Gabriel, but takes on kind of a more tribal kind of sound while still remaining pretty ambient and chill, is really good. Whew. Love that series. Ben, what's Geo Law say?
Geo Law says, "I have a few VG soundtracks on my phone, including Risk of Rain, Puzzle Agent, and Tropico 4, for which I want to sneak in a shout out for getting me into Latin jazz. I find they're good to work to. Thanks for Cole for this tip. And my favorite is Kentucky Route Zero's mix of bluegrass and ambient synthetic tracks."
Here, here.
There's one. Is that KRO track?
Kentucky Route Zero.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I am not cool. There's one Kentucky Route Zero track in particular. However, that just isn't the same thing as hearing it in the game for reasons that I would be a spoiler to explain. But it is nice to listen and remember that moment in the game.
Yeah, and there was a duplicate there, so we don't need to continue with the same thing over and over again.
Geolol says,
"No, there's saying twice." I feel like Risk of Rain would be another of those games, kind of like the boss fights, that I associate so much stress to playing the game.
That is a tense, tense game. Yeah, Kentucky Route Zero is great. Like, that's, if he's talking about the one that I'm thinking of, then for sure. And, like, those are actual, like, they got bluegrass artists to contribute songs to that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, really good. Let's see. Dennis, what's Sean say?
Sean says, I don't usually listen to just one game soundtrack. It's typically a mix. However, the Shovel Knight soundtrack became my workout companion for some time. Also, Early Frost Warning has a great soundtrack that I've been enjoying at work, and I haven't even played the game yet.
Play the game. It's really good.
Huh.
Yeah. That is that is Gary's game that he put out. Mm-hmm. That I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And Gary does good music.
Did he do the soundtrack for it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Go pay attention to that. It's really good.
We got lots of stuff to plug on this show.
I suppose, yeah. Well, here's the thing. When you're, like, associating with cool people who make cool things, you want them to, like, succeed and have people pay attention to those cool things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good time. It's a good time to, like, know cool people. Let's see here. I'll pick up with Drew Rowland, who says, Saints Row 4, Biz Markie, just a friend.
Yep.
The moment when that pops in. I liked that a lot more than Saints Row 3 when that Sublime song or whatever came on. Just because identify more with the Biz Markie cut in, and also the way that they play with the main villain cutting in to it as well. And play with it, and they take such offense to the fact that Zinyak or whatever his name is would interrupt Biz Markie, that that fuels their anger even more, so they use that to a good story beat. Because that one was so short, I'll continue with Sam Bear, who says, I don't listen to game soundtracks nearly as much as I did when I was younger, but I'll still occasionally throw on Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, Hotline Miami, or Drakengard as some driving music.
Nice.
Yeah, the cool thing about the Revengeance soundtrack, which I'm working my way through that game slowly. I want to actually save up to when I can actually like talk about it with intelligence. I suck at that game so bad. Is that all of the boss themes are like the lyrics are written about that boss? So as you're fighting along and listening to it, you realize, oh, they're describing this person that you're fighting.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see here, David. What's
it's
Nick's...
like the end of God Hand? The final song is all about like his kicks and punches and stuff.
Yep. David, what's
next? And not nearly as good a game, but Double Dragon Neon does a similar thing.
Oh yeah, they're definitely like is it a little bit of like a best around kind of montage thing where they're trying to pump you up.
Again, I'm going to interject. Double Dragon Neon would definitely be on my list. Although I'm a little disappointed that a couple of the little soundtrack. Or what they call you know your perk songs, that some of those aren't actually full songs.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
So Nick says, I have several favorite songs, and I change the speeds outside of the game itself. Guided Fate Paradox's Martial Arts Dungeon song at about 85% true speed is really good. The Junin March from Rufus in Final Fantasy VII is a big favorite as well, especially at around the 60 to 110% true speed area.
I think he's doing some chopping and screwing.
Mm-hmm.
60 to 110 is a big window.
So, yeah, I was going to say.
Well, it depends on his mood.
I don't know.
It's just like you kind of spin a wheel and it just lands wherever between there, and then you pick that for your song.
I do have to say, I feel like Martial Arts Dungeon song sounds like something I could probably get behind.
I think they're just doing David SEO, actually. I don't know. Is that an incorrect assessment?
Maybe.
Sorry.
No, I'm joking. No, that sounds right on.
Let's see, Ben, how about whoever's next?
Mike says, actually, one of the soundtracks I keep coming back to is for the Scott Pilgrim versus the World beat 'em up. That sounds awesome. The movie soundtrack's great. I haven't played the video game, but I imagine it would be also really good. Anna Monoguchi did the whole soundtrack in chiptune, and they really captured the catchy, energetic vibe you might find in a, say, Mega Man game. Mm-hmm. It's been years since I touched the game, but I still listen to the OST on a long drive.
I've never played the game, but I like the soundtrack because Anna Monoguchi is great.
Yeah, I love the guy who does the pixel art for the Scott Pilgrim game. If I remember correct, it's the same guy that did Mercenary Kings.
Hmm. That is also a good-looking game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, Amanda.
Amanda says, Skyrim's soundtrack is pretty darn inspiring. The music from Kirby's Epic Yarn is unbelievably charming.
That is the first consensus we've had, I think, where Kirby's Epic Yarn has come up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm excited for Yoshi's Woolly World.
Is this like the same basic thing except Yoshi?
Yep.
Like this the same aesthetic idea? Kind of?
It's like a Yoshi's Island game except done in that aesthetic.
Okay.
But, like on a high definition console, so they're going to be able to do the materials in a faithful way.
Nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
Excited about that.
It's something for Sean's son to follow up.
I suppose. I mean, I imagine Sean has a Wii U probably, or is considering one, because that looks really good. Phil Holmes writes in saying, I'm a huge fan of the soundtracks from the Final Fantasy series, as well as Chrono Trigger. Mega Man Classic and X also sound really good, but it doesn't get any better than the Castlevania series.
Nice.
Yeah, Castlevania, man, that the Castlevania 3. I don't know, like that mixture of like, let's do something that is one third prog rock, let's do something that's like one third baroque, and something that's just one third shredding metal. That speaks to me, and the fact that they kind of kept it so consistent across the entire series is great. Dennis, is the soundtrack in Lords of Shadow, is that any good?
It doesn't stand out in my mind, although I remember it being in the same vein. I couldn't tell you anything specific about it. So it was inoffensive, I guess.
Yeah, it's from what I listened to, it was kind of like Hans Zimmer Singularity.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wait, he has a song called Singularity?
Yeah, charted in New Zealand. Is he dead?
Is it from the Interstellar soundtrack?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Well, because I have the other soundtrack, and I don't think he has a song called Singularity on that. So I just think it's weird that he has that, and it's not on the Interstellar soundtrack.
No. The Hans Zimmer, it's something that I say glibly just by referring to the fact that most video game soundtracks with the ability to do full orchestration tend to kind of regress to the mean of let's do like large orchestras and like huge chanting sections, as Hans Zimmer tends to do in his most overblown of compositions. It belies a level of disrespect for Hans Zimmer that I don't think I actually have.
I like Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, he's good. He's a fine composer, but it's discouraging to see video game music going after cinematic music in a way that kind of gets rid of what's cool about the limitations of video game music, at least as they once existed. But I don't know. That makes me sound like a snob, so I don't know if I want to do that.
No, I can get behind that opinion.
Yeah.
You should play to your medium.
Definitely. And there's nothing saying that a good cinematic soundtrack can't be good as well. What does Omega Moose say, David?
Omega Moose says, most of the ones I listen to have been mentioned already. Deus Ex, Morrowind, Journey, etc. One that hasn't been said, though, is The Secret World. It's an amazing soundtrack that really gets you into the setting. It, like the game it's in, would probably have more recognition if it was released as a single-player game instead of an MMO. But oh well. At least I can enjoy the soundtrack and the modern time spooky stuff vibe it has going on for years to come, along with the other soundtracks I and others have mentioned, of course.
David, you're the only person who's played
really
the Secret World.
I really love Secret World so much.
Yeah? Does it change appreciably between the regions? Because that's pretty disparate in terms of setting, right?
I'll be totally honest, I vaguely, the only music I remember is like the intro, like the title menu thing, which is all like vaguely indistinct female singing. I don't remember I love the game, the soundtrack isn't something I remember as being amazing, but I'm not a huge music person anyways, right. So I honestly don't recall.
Okay. Let's see here, Ben, what does Mikhail say?
Mikhail says, I listen to the OST for Fez by Disaster Piece, all the time. Really lovely. Also, Hotline Miami and FTL get a decent rotation.
Yeah. for as many stressful situations as FTL puts you in, I still can listen to that because it's even the most hectic music in the FTL soundtrack is really like just peaceful and groovy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, I could easily pick a soundtrack that's traditionally celebrated, but instead I'd like to highlight a soundtrack I think is unique. By the way, not great at describing music. We'll forgive you this time. That was me. The soundtrack for the N64 game Mischief Makers has a wide variety of moody tracks, but what impresses me most is the way each track sounds mechanical and cybernetic. It is interesting because it ties to the player character, Maria, the intergalactic Cybot G. Listening to the track separate from the game isn't as necessarily compelling as it is with the game, but I think it's a style you don't hear very often.
Hmm.
I've never heard of Mischief Makers before.
I have. It's a treasure game, I believe.
Hey, what?
Really?
Yeah, Treasure, the developer who ended up doing the... I'm going to have confuse us. Yes, it is Treasure. This is the developer who did, like, Gunstar Heroes. They also did, like, Bang.io and... Silhouette Mirage is the other one that's coming to mind. Sin and Punishment is also a big one. Kind of like a revered Japanese developer that did a whole bunch of, like, kind of difficult games. This was their kind of standout title on... the old N64.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
This looks like a leading candidate for like a Smash Brothers character.
A little bit,
like
yeah.
If the character is not in Smash Brothers already, why not?
Because Treasure is currently, I think, kind of toiling in obscurity on either remaking their old games or doing stuff that's like DSiWare, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, and I will round us out with, let's hear Brian Pitt, who writes in saying, despite how much of a well-meaning mess this game is, I've always loved the Xenogears soundtrack. In terms of soundtracks that aren't widely beloved, my favorite unappreciated soundtrack to listen to is the NES Robin Hood Prince of Thieves one. The Mass Battle song is especially great. I think it'd be good for us to go around and do ours. We got through a large number of responses in a relatively short amount of time. So thank you everybody for writing in. I hope the listeners were kind of taking note. This is a, like I said at the beginning, something that you mind this for like music to listen to when you are doing other stuff. You're going to have a good time. But let's see here. Dennis, how about you since you put this forward? Did you have something on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, so probably for the more traditional answer, or one more people might recognize, is the Last of Us soundtrack. Just they really, really nailed the feel of that game incredibly well. And I'm spacing on the guy who they had make it, so one second.
Gustavo Santaolalla?
Yes, yep. That guy. But just the stuff he does with guitar, and specifically the way they use it within the game. I would listen to it outside the game. I haven't, but you know, I could see it being very listenable outside of the game. Mm-hmm. But specifically the way it shows up at the right intervals in the game is very moving. So, yeah. Just in terms of overall fit between a game and its music, that one stands out.
Yeah.
The other one is more obscure. It's Medal of Honor Frontline. And this is, you know, it's a random PS2 shooter. But the main theme of it is done with, I think, a boys choir.
Hmm.
And it just really, really struck me at the time. I think I was young enough that the like really quiet, peaceful song to open a war game had not yet become totally cliche, so that's probably half the reason it stood out to me. But it's just a, you know, opening with a single voice that has a very strong melody to it. Yep. That then kind of gives way to more orchestral stuff. But it's one of the things where I would always pause in the main screen to listen through that first part of it. And they had a documentary on the disc about, you know, recording that, so that was cool as well. So yeah, that one stands out in my mind.
Nice.
And then final one, I know I'm giving three answers to one question, but final one, I not so much for the music, but I remember my mind being completely blown when I was like, I wonder what happened if I put a PS1 game into a CD player, did it with Jet Moto, and it worked.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, those are just CDs. Nice. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I also have like three answers for this, I think. So the song for Snake Eater, the main menu song, or like the theme song for it, is amazing.
Was that like the James Bond intro one?
Yep.
Oh yeah, and
that's basically just a cover of Goldfinger.
Pretty much. But there's fun lyrics in it.
Oh yeah.
Talking about eating tree frogs and whatnot.
The latter remix of that one too, that is just like way more mournful as well.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
No, the one that you're climbing up, the one that you hear when you're climbing up the ladder. You know the ladder.
I thought that's the same one as, yeah, I know the ladder, but I thought that's the same one as the main menu one.
I thought that it was more, it's not as bombastic. I think there are two versions.
Okay. I'll have to go back and fact check that.
Yeah, that's go back and play that game. It's really good.
I guess
good.
I'll have to go back and play that entire game.
Okay.
Yep.
Do it. It's really good. It's a good game.
And then another one I want to throw out is Mike Moraski, who did the soundtrack for Portal 2. Hmm. There's a couple of tracks on that that are really, really solid. I really like SPA4 Finale 4B12. Yeah, that's a good track. And also Knights of the Republic, I really thought, did a good job of nailing the Star Wars music that was already pre-existing, but also kind of making it their own, and then kind of making like battle music very seamlessly integrated with the game. So. Hmm.
Nice. I think all of those are good picks. Mm-hmm. David, how about you?
Sure. I'd say one I really like is Transistor, particularly the songs with lyrics. I really like music that's, you know, really built around female vocals.
Right.
Kind of making that the focus. And also in particular, the singer whose name escapes me right now, is also the same woman, I believe, who did it for Bastion.
Yeah.
Is just incredibly talented.
You dig a hole, build a wall kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Chills. Like, I've got goosebumps in my arms just thinking about that song.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if you play Transistor, the way they use the songs, like when they're kind of those particular ones are kind of interspersed, you know, throughout the game when they kind of show up, and they tend to be used with, you know, very, very good impact. Mm-hmm. So. I'd say the other one that's kind of a weird one is Planet Side, the original one, had a track I really like. It was violin focused. I actually went back and, you know, found the on YouTube, you know, someone posted up the soundtrack because I wanted to mention on the level sometime. I actually couldn't find the song or the tune it was that I really liked. So
frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. So something in Planescape, some song in Planescape is amazing.
Planescape or Planetside?
Planetside.
Okay.
Something begins with a P, has a vaguely word that means place.
Okay. Huh.
Like place the game.
Yeah, place the game.
Yeah.
Oh.
So and then
where the setting is not just the character, it's all there is.
Yes. Now, I also mentioned already, Double Dragon Neon is pretty epic.
Cool. So it's not going to surprise you that I have some answers for this. the ones I've been listening to recently, the nine Hours, Nine Persons, Nine Doors. I know people are sick and tired of hearing about this game, and they're going to be even sicker and tireder later on. But boy, oh boy, is that kind of just an amazing mix of kind of like ambient and get you pumped up. Like, this is music to think that you're dying to. Which is really good. Kind of the perennial favorites for me are Breath of Fire 3, that kind of synthy jazz, like you would not expect this to be the music that is set to a final or a fantasy rather kind of game. It's just way, way out of left field. And Chrono Cross are also favorites of the Silent Hills. I prefer 3 and 4. For the soundtrack, just because it's much more of like a pop album kind of thing, mixed in with, again, radio static and guttural yelling and screaming. for chiptune kind of stuff, Sword and Sorcery, and a bunch of the other Jim Guthrie kind of music. And always, as always, Machinarium is my favorite game soundtrack of all time, maybe, just in terms of the amount of time that I've listened to it. It is the music that I put on when I'm just trying to disappear into a task and focus and just think like I like to think.
Nice.
Yeah. And what I would recommend if people are like listening to this and thinking, man, you guys just threw out, like, you spent a half hour saying a bunch of titles of games, you probably have bought a whole bunch of Humble Bundles. And the nice thing about the Humble Store is that if you bought a bundle or even a game from them, you can go in and check your, like, purchase history or download history. And if you've just redeemed the Steam codes, you can actually go back to that page and check and see, because most of the time they come with soundtracks as well. Those are free for you. You can just drop them into your iTunes, and those are yours to keep. So that is a fantastic way. You probably have access to this music legally and you don't even know it. So go and check that out, because you've already bought it, dummy. Go listen to it.
Yeah, as soon as you mentioned the Machinarium soundtrack, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I have a bundle with that in it. So.
Yeah, it's so good. Score. Yeah, like you're sitting on all this music. Don't not listen to it.
Hey, Cole, have you ever heard any of the soundtrack from Skullgirls?
No, I have not.
I think you might dig that, because it's all, you know, the whole game's Art Deco style, so it's all, you know, jazz. Mm-hmm. But it strikes me as very, very... You know, it's getting the Art Deco aesthetic, but it doesn't come across, I don't think, as being like retro, you know, trying to go for retro sound. It almost more sounds like if someone's, you know, took like the overall feel of, say, like some Final Fantasy fight music, mm-hmm. and then just made it in the genre of jazz.
Oh, I'll have to make a note of it.
Yeah.
Also, the L.A. Noire soundtrack is fucking impeccable.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for coming out and answering this this question for us. This is a topic that I think all of us here get passionate about, and apparently all of mm-hmm. you get passionate about as well. If you want to be a participant in future multiplayer sections, just go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for those questions on Tuesday afternoons. Dennis is so kind as to put those out, and he's been killing it. So thank you, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to everyone for responding.
The grind. It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing. Dennis, earlier you expressed excitement over getting to this segment, so I'm going to allow you an opportunity to speak first.
I started playing Her Story, and it is awesome.
Are you playing with Jen?
I am, yeah. So we played last night until we started falling asleep. So
it's a very sedate and serene game.
It's amazing. It's like, and I said this on Twitter, but it's like playing the podcast Serial.
And like, that's intentional. They specifically like cited that as an inspiration.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all by that. So it's amazing. And just, you know, I think most games talk about, you know, oh, hey, we want to give you freedom to do whatever you want. That takes the form of a big open world and what have you. But this is truly the game where I have felt the most freedom to do whatever I want. And I felt like that is the most respected and utilized I've seen that freedom in a game.
It's
just how... Yeah, go ahead.
It is a redefinition of what non-linearity means for games, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so just that wonderful process of, you know, I think it serves up your first search term and that's it. And even then, you know, you can choose not to hit enter on that search and go off in your own direction. But then, you know, from that one search term, you could go any one of 100 directions. And then from that, you know, the second search term, you could go any one of 100 directions again. And it just, it's incredible how well the story has started to come to light, despite the zillion different ways I could have gone with it. It blows my mind. And it's also the kind of game that you think about while you're not playing it a lot, mm-hmm. especially, I don't know, Cole, did you play it all in one sitting?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Is there a win condition or an end condition or something?
There is a way for it to end, but it is more along the lines of you're not done with it until you say you're done with it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And even then, like, you boot it up and you get the home screen, and there's no instruction that says, hey, this is what you should be trying to do, and this is how you...
There are some readmes that tell you how to use the database.
Yeah, even that's in-world, though, in the form of, like, it seems like a friend has given you access to this database of video from the local constabulary. Constabulary there, sure. But yeah, so I mean, even that is kind of in world, if you will, diegetic, shall we say? So yeah, there's very limited guidance if you go looking for it. But it's you know, you kind of know what you're trying to do intuitively. Mm-hmm. But I've also been really just kind of getting some of the subtler points of the story, and having those aha moments is what this game is all about.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. It's that, oh my God, I just, you know, something clicks and you put two things together that, you know, it's been in front of you for the entire game, but you find that one clip that recontextualizes everything, and all of a sudden you want to go back and look at everything a second time with this new perspective. This game just does that over and over and over in a really rewarding way. So to get back to my early point, it's a game that you play when you're not playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, over dinner, Jen and I were drinking wine and theorizing about what we should search next. So, in a way, you know, I I'm glad that I'm getting a little more space for it. We'll probably play it over several sittings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's equally as valid. And hopefully, I mean, I've had one play session, but hopefully the story and everything holds up as I continue to play it. But it's an absolute delight so far.
So I'm curious, because my playthrough of this game was marked by a solitary, let's say, madness.
Yeah, sure.
which is just a very grandiose way of saying that, like, I came up with a line of inquiry and I took just furious notes and evolved to the way that I kind of kept track of what I had searched and what I was going to search as I went along. And I was very methodical about it. Do you have any kind of, like, metagame kind of strategies that you've taken, either note-taking or, you know, specifically discussions with Jen, you know, like the way that you have organized your lines of inquiry, for lack of a better word?
So, yeah, we both played with a notepad. I used mine and Jen didn't, but I'm not nearly as rigorous a note taker. So I'd like the first couple of videos you watched, I didn't know what was important to look for. So I kind of wrote down everything, which wasn't super helpful. Mm-hmm. And then as you kind of get in, I started writing down names and trying to just diagram for myself what the relationships between the people mentioned were.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, so-and-so got so-and-so a job.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like these two people are married, but I'm not sure. And so that was kind of the direction I went. But kind of after each series of videos, so we'd search a term. Usually it returns about, you know, five or so videos. If there are more hits, I don't think you can scroll through those, right?
Yeah, it always goes beyond five, or it never goes beyond five. So it'll show you the first five chronologically that are recorded and reported with that tag.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that we'd search a term, we'd watch the first five. And then we'd discuss and, like, try to connect threads. And then we'd kind of decide on, okay, what's the next term that we want to search? Watch everything that popped up for that, discuss, connect threads. So I've got, like, kind of a messy page of notes. And I think I'll continue writing stuff down just because it's fun to play cop, I guess, you know? But, you know, equally as good has been the discussion. Like, we came up with a new term that we want to search over dinner. Or, you know, we noticed things just in the way the person was dressed or things about them that didn't really lend themselves to taking a note on. It was just kind of more noting it to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was my overall feeling when I, you know, watched some you know, brief Let's Play of it. It's that I feel like playing this game would just drive me crazy because I'm the person who, like, We'll spend, you know, stay up till like 3 a.m, like following chains of things on Wikipedia and stuff.
Oh yeah, this is your game.
Yeah, the nice part is there's a finite amount of it. Like, there's only so many hours of video in this game, so it's
sure
like, you're going to follow those chains. But eventually, if you are rigorous, which is what you're kind of telling us, you're going to get to the end of it.
All right. Is there a chronological mode? Can I just say, show me the first one to the end one?
No, that would defeat the purpose a little bit, because the later ones have revelations. You never see or hear what the detectives ask. So you are just assembling this out of answers. And there's a, like, the reason why this is the way it is because, like, the database has been, like, fragmented or something like that. Like, you can't actually, like, they don't have that information. So you just have the transcripts to go by.
Yeah. Again, there's an in-game reason for, like, hey, this was a new system they were trying for categorizing stuff, and it kind of got mothballed. But, you know, you were interested, so we're digging it out for you. It's kind of in disarray because no one's looked at it for 20 years or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. Ben, it sounded like you had something to ask.
Well, yeah, it was pretty much similar to what David was going to ask. I was going to say, like, how do you get the later videos then? There's no way to sort it. But, yeah, I guess you just have to kind of follow the threads, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And you can get lucky just by, you know, the game rewards you for either searching for something incredibly generic. Like, if you search for the title of the game, it'll pull something back that's kind of big. Or if you just take a wild stab, like, it is about experimentation.
I think my favorite one I saw is on the Let's Play. I watched one of the hosts insisted that it's a search engine. Therefore, you are obligated to the first thing you search for must be sex.
Yep.
Which does return something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
well, it's interesting. For the thing that I noticed is that the game most... So you're searching... When you're searching for videos, it's searching the transcript of what she says. And the best rewards I've gotten is searches not based on the transcripts. So it's, you know, I'm not parroting something that she said back into the machine. Mm-hmm. I'm noticing something, again, maybe physically about her or, a theme that I'm noticing.
Yeah.
And searching for that, even if it hasn't been directly mentioned yet, is what has revealed the biggest revelations, has opened up the biggest revelations.
Yeah. Yeah, this.
I'm a little annoyed though. The thing I was watching to, you know, get an idea of, like, what the hell is this game? The very first comment on the thing was the main plot twist.
Oh man, you're doing yourself a disservice.
I'm,
like,
a little annoyed by that.
Yeah, like, you're ruined. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Huh. That sucks.
Like, I want to say I know what the plot twist is that you're referencing, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that kind of frustrates me because, like, I'm careful. Like, I wouldn't have watched a Let's Play, you know, past, like, you know, I watch, you know, 10 minutes in, you know, something like that. And, like, I wouldn't have gone over it. But, like, usually people are polite enough to not be that blatant.
Mm. Comments, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
might be GOTY 2015 so far for me.
Hmm. Hmm.
Yeah.
We're only halfway through. Stuff.
I know. I mean, so far. Yeah. You got anything else, Dennis?
This one will kind of segue with Ben. I played co-op Borderlands 2.
Hmm.
Oh, cool.
And that was a lot of fun. So, played it with Phil Holmes. With Ben, and then someone who I was streaming it, and someone from the Twitch feed was like, "Hey, got room for one more?" I was like, "Oh yeah!" So we had just another friend hop on from Twitch. But playing that game co-op is something else. Like, that is a really, really fun time.
Nice. Do you guys have, like, voice chat?
We actually didn't. Ben, you did.
I plugged in one microphone and it worked. I plugged in another one and it did not work. So yeah, I don't know.
Hmm.
We communicate through the international language of bullets.
Of jumping up and down. Yeah.
I think so.
One jump for yes, definitely. Two jumps for no.
We call that journeys.
that would take so long. This reinforces my belief of, you know, if you're going to do a co-op game, make sure you play it through alone first, if you care at all about the story. We all had like level 20-ish characters, which is probably a third, maybe a little more of the way through the game. And it just to jump in and just to pick some random missions. I wasn't even sure if they were story missions or not, and go off and do them. Was really fun, and not being worried about getting all the dialogue or not being worried about, you know, sticking to the main story, made it that much more enjoyable. Which speaks well to Borderlands just being fun to play. Like mechanically, that game is really sound. But yeah, I don't know, Ben, if you have anything else to say about it. I could definitely see arranging more co-op in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a throwback. Unfortunately for me, I had to spend about an hour updating my PS3 to get it to play. Because there were a lot of updates I needed to install. But once that was over, yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. It's crazy how dated the game seems, even though I guess it's been out like 2.5, 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. But
in what way?
You know, because when I first played the game, I thought like, oh, since it's cel shading, like it'll never look old. But to me, when I played it this time, it seemed just dated. I don't know how to describe it other than that. Dennis, did you get that impression at all? Or
no, but I don't own a PS4 yet, so you know, I'm a Philistine.
I do feel like to a certain degree, yeah. They now that you mention it, they almost kind of got the opposite effect. To it's like it's cel shaded, so therefore it instantly looks old. If that makes sense,
it puts it outside of time to a certain extent. Hopefully, I mean that's kind of the goal and the assumption we've been working under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
I think maybe this is the way to put it. Is I think the art style that they did looks really good still, and not as good when it's in motion.
Mm.
And I'm not sure what to chalk that up to, but like. Stills from Borderlands will always look really good because it's got that cel shading aesthetic to it. But the game
only Portal 2 has
cel
shading
action.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Continue. You're saying something about multiplayer action. I'm an asshole. I'm sorry.
No. You inserted a really good joke.
But yeah. So when it's in motion, that it just doesn't look as good for some reason.
Yeah. More reason to get Borderlands 3 going.
Yeah.
Is Gearbox in a position to do that?
Whatever they got. They've got like 1 or 2.5 or something like that. Like
the pre-sequel.
They made Borderlands on the Moon. I forget what that one's called.
There you go. Yeah, the pre-sequel. That's it.
Hmm. Moonderlands.
Sorry.
I don't know if I need more of it though. Like I said, it was really fun to just hop in and dig around for a while, and it didn't like I'm not craving more to do in this game, especially if I'm just messing around with friends. Like the original has plenty of that for me.
Yeah.
To me, Borderlands is I feel very similar to the way I feel with like the Saints Row 4 and Get Out of Hell, in that they're all good games. But after playing the first one, I don't really, I'm not hungry. I never got hungry enough for more to really enjoy them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's at this point it's playing with friends, which is fun. Because you know all the different class abilities do feel like they. You know, stand out in combat and play well. Like, you know, it was fun to be in the middle of an intense firefight and realize, oh, that's, you know, that's Ben's, you know, death trap, you know, flying around mauling people, or, you know, Phil just threw out his cannon so I can run behind that and that sort of thing. So, or his turret, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, that felt cool and meaningful. I did notice that when we had 4 people going and a ton of enemies on the screen at once, there was a bit of choppiness, which is unfortunate. But overall, it was a really good experience.
Yeah. Now we just need to get microphones.
We do. I need to pick up another USB mic and like an extension cord so I can sit on my couch and use it.
that's the trick, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ben, that was a segue to you. Yeah, let's throw off to you.
Yeah, so honestly, that has been all that I have played this week, unfortunately. I've caught up on my movie quota. I saw Mulholland Drive for the first time this weekend.
I thought you saw that before. I thought your mom took you to see that.
I was supposed to go see it at the Esquire, but the projector broke. And so we bought tickets for it, but we never saw it. So I fulfilled this 14 years later. So,
huh? That's huh. a probably, what'd you think?
A good thing. It was super good, but probably a good thing I didn't see the movie with my mom. Maybe I
oh,
don't know.
Oh, for fucking sure.
Wait. So, what is this Molyneux's line or?
Molyneux's Drive.
Yeah. No.
The road that never gets finished.
Just ends. Just drops off into the ocean. No. This is Mulholland Drive. It's a David Lynch movie. A really really good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going through Roger Ebert's like great movie list right now of all like the 4-star movies that he's reviews that he's given.
Oh, nice.
Nice. What's up next?
Spirited Away, which again I have not seen, but I probably should have.
Yeah, that's really good.
That one's one also that I don't know quite how you'd gain that. Like I watched it with someone who was like an Asian studies major. Like there's a lot of it that makes a lot more sense if you understand some Japanese like folklore and mythology.
Okay.
I don't know how you, like I said, I don't know how you would do that, but that is one that, like, I think if you can, like, get some of that, you'll get some more out of it.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, that's great.
I know that there are possibly, like, there are some fan subs or whatever that will put in, like, that information and, like, in text on the screen, actually providing some of it for you. I don't know if that's in any kind of official release, though.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's like that VH1 show.
Oh, yeah, pop-up video. But... pop-up Miyazaki, yeah. Cool.
The mere fact that you call it that, Cole.
Pretty good. David, how about you? What you been playing?
Sure. I've been trying Running with Rifles, which is a indie game on Steam that's kind of... I feel like it's sort of if you made a top down like fairly low tech Battlefield game combined with a cover shooter.
Okay.
So its big thing is you play as one member one soldier in this army, and there's I think up to three armies. You know, going at it, you know, trying to capture territory. And it's pretty much, you know, sandboxy. You can just run all over, and there's, you know, lots of other, you know, soldiers participating in the fights. And then the kind of some of the big mechanics things of it are one, it uses a real interesting health system where basically you have no health, but each shot has approximately, depending on the weapon, between a 40% and a 100% chance to instantly kill you.
Okay.
So like the end result is basically it's kind of designed to be a more, you know, more realistic shooter. So you can, well, I guess this kind of goes into one of the other things is sort of the one of the themes of the game is that your character is just another soldier. You know, you're not at all like a super soldier or some like crazy special forces dude that's going around taking, you know, tons of people out. You're literally just another grunt. And so, like, the end result of that with the health system is, like, there'll be times where, like, you'll just be running across the battlefield and, like, get shot and you're dead.
Hmm.
Like, it does a very good job of, like, kind of simulating and communicating kind of the mortality and kind of the arbitrariness of what kind of combat's really presumably like. As opposed to, you know, kind of the power fantasy sort of thing that video games normally go for.
Yeah, it takes the rare position that getting shot is a big fucking deal.
Well, yeah, and it's also not even that. It's just, you know, very much the arbitrariness of it. You know, it's just, you know, very much you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time and you're dead.
Yeah.
So yeah, which is also kind of weird because the gameplay itself, like, it looks, fairly cartoony. They have pop up like speech bubbles for your character for the various soldiers, and many of them are fairly comical. So like when there's an incoming grenade, OMG grenade, stuff like that. So it adds some weirdness to that. The other big mechanic is when you get near cover, you basically go behind cover and break line of sight, and then can fire around it. So that's it's a very difficult game. And so that's, if you don't do that, you basically would just keep getting killed over and over again.
Okay.
So it's a really cool game. It's got a really neat and original concept. Some interesting things it communicates. The big problem with it for me is I just don't like it.
it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of these things where I don't think you can exactly criticize a game for like being what they wanted to communicate, but the problem is that you're just another soldier doesn't make a good game, because like to a significant degree that means you really have very little control, particularly like early on, at least you have very little control over what actually happens.
I mean, is there a sense of progression? Like, is this a Counter-Strike rich get richer kind of thing? Because what you're describing to me actually sounds more equitable. If everybody is kind of, equally likely to die, it puts more emphasis on your ability to kind of like scrap it through.
Right. Well, two things. Basically, the way it works is every time you kill an enemy, you get, like, from what I've seen, between 3 and 4 XP. And then every time you die, you lose 2 XP. And then you can basically rise through the ranks. And that gives you, eventually you can get the ability to like call in airstrikes or supply drops or like paratrooper reinforcements, things like that. So you can start affecting the battlefield. And then probably that's also how you unlock more weapons. But probably the most interesting thing is you can eventually get the ability to you open up squad slots. And so when you're near other NPC soldiers, they'll join up with you and follow you around, and you can like give them basic directions. And so my understanding is, and this actually goes into one of the other things I kind of don't like about the game, is my understanding is that at that point, you then gain a lot more ability to, affect the goings on, which makes sense because, I mean, my understanding is a lot of what does make the difference is, having a commander or whatever that's, directing things in a fairly, rational manner. Mm-hmm. The big problem with that is with the losing 2 XP every time you die, it's very easy to not make progress or even be progressing in the wrong direction. Yeah. And it's just, I'm something like halfway through. I've played 1.7 hours according to the game, and so I've just started, but I'm something like halfway to the first rank. I have to make several ranks before I can gain these abilities. Hmm. So it seems like they kind of overemphasize grinding to begin with. Hmm. So yeah, so that's my thing. And it's and I guess the thing I'd say, kind of your other thing is, from what I've seen at the early levels, no matter what you do, you can't really affect the outcome of the game because it's a thing, it's a thing where like you can kill, like I'm now to the point where like usually I'll kill at least 3 or 4 people before I get killed. But that's, when you're fighting an army, that really doesn't matter.
Right.
So it's one of these things, like, I would recommend the game. I think it's a legitimate game, and I think it's has some really great ideas. And also, I think a lot of these features, like, I think you can turn off the death penalty on your server and stuff, so a lot of these things can simply be turned off. Yeah. But I do think it does have a little bit of difficulty with, like, grinding to begin with, and with maybe some of its what they wanted to do with the game maybe not syncing up always with making a good game, which, is obviously a decision. I don't think that's an illegitimate decision, but yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So that's basically all I've been playing.
Okay. Yeah, and I'd never heard of this game before. So did you just find it? Was it recommended to you on Steam, or did you?
Yeah, I think it's a relatively new release, and yeah, I think it was recommended to me on Steam, and I right now only have my Mac, so I'm kind of what games can I play on a Mac without a video card?
Yeah.
So.
What was the name of the game again?
Running with Rifles.
That's right.
Which is horrible, horrible lies, because running around with your rifle and trying to shoot people is a horrible idea.
Well, maybe try and do it at the same time.
True. But in general, this should be cautiously and conservatively advancing behind sensible cover. Rifles.
That's great. Huh. And that's all.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I've been traveling.
So I'll go ahead and do mine. So last week I made a show. I bought The Witcher 3, and I even unboxed it on the air, very creepily. And I took that game and I went to put it into my PlayStation 4, and I saw that Dragon Age Inquisition was still inside my PlayStation 4, so I decided to play that all week. Huh. Faked.
I disagree with that decision, but okay.
There's only room enough for one, like, epic fantasy in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to do a whirlwind tour because I knew if I started another one, I would be half committed to both of them, as opposed to getting what I wanted out of Dragon Age Inquisition. Even though I recognize that The Witcher 3 is a much more highly regarded game, I have a lot of investment in the Dragon Age storyline and world, and I want to see how this thing ties itself up.
I feel like I need a poster on my wall that says, like, there's only enough time for one epic fantasy in your life.
Yep.
Or Ross.
Oh, man, oh, man. So, yeah. When the game lets me play the main quest, it is very good. Mm-hmm. I like the story, and I like what it is, trying to do. And I feel like, as somebody who has, I feel like it is paying me dividends for having played the first two, right? Like, when they talk about, like, oh, what is the Tevinter Empire? Like, they're playing more of a role in this story, but I've heard about them being dicks for 6 years now, so it's cool to actually see that kind of come to a head, and the way that they're drawing everything to not so much a close, but to a head rather, is pretty satisfying. Notice the caveat that I put on that, which is when the game lets me play the main quest, because
you gotta grind.
You have to grind, and oh my God, why would you put so much effort into making all of these big, beautiful spaces if all you're going to have me do in them is go and collect 10 of an object?
Mm-hmm.
And
press the left thumbstick the entire time you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to miss out on any secrets.
Right. And so this doesn't need to be an open world game. I would so much prefer that they use something that is akin to the structure of the first game, which is just you are going and pursuing these, individual missions in these disparate places, right? Like, the first game wasn't, lacking for setting, right? Like the second game was, but the second game had a lot of cool stuff happening in the story. But this is a game that is content to, and I'm sorry if I'm retreading ground that we covered, Ben, with you when you were playing it, for the first time and going through it. But you are the leader of this Inquisition, right? Which is kind of a rogue arm of the Chantry that pops up in the wake of chaos caused by, you know, the events that happened at the beginning of this game. And so you are, you know, assembling this keep and you are trying to do a whole bunch of stuff to try and gather power for the Inquisition. And that's,
and yet you never use the rack on someone.
Right. You know, and that's actually played with, like, you're called the Inquisition, but in reality you are just kind of like the army for trying to solve this shit. There is no
curious.
Yep. Exactly. Dragon Age curious.
To be fair, no one ever expects it.
Right. And they don't really give it to you here either, so it's good that you don't expect it. You're not gonna be disappointed. Yeah, but the fact that, like, the main quest and the main quest only is gated by this power kind of stuff, it makes it feel like some kind of free-to-play bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
so when you say power is, it's, can you explain that?
It's literally just points that you get for going and doing stuff in the world. And
yeah.
I'm not talking about just like, oh, you go and like do an interesting quest for like this little village that you find in this one little place. There's a little bit of that, but like the interesting quest is walk across the map and talk to this thing and then come back to me.
Yeah.
There are ways that you can kind of like game it because there are all these like rifts and tears that are letting demons through the world. And like, that's fine, right? Like, you just go to difficult portions of the map and you do like a little like wave defense portion of the game until you close that. And there's a certain number that you can do in order to like use those to farm points. And generally, if you're in the right place, those are like a good challenge for you right now, you know, wherever you're at. And that's a way to get it. But like, it's so rote and it's so mechanical. And I feel like the game is punishing me and forcing me to go play stuff that isn't very interesting in order to get to the stuff that is.
Yep. Did they have like an amazing 15-hour game and feel like they needed to make it 25?
It's kind of what it feels like.
Huh.
You should really just play The Witcher 3, man.
I know I should, but I want to see how it ends. I'm so invested, and you know, we're a little bit past. This isn't even a spoiler, right? Like, the but, you know, because she was featured so heavily in the promo materials, but like Morrigan is back, right? Mm-hmm. You know, from
I
the
don't first, know who that is.
She was a character from the first game who I really liked, and like she's really involved with the story of the world and also the story of my hero from the first game. And so to have her come back in the way that she does, it's like, okay, all of a sudden my interest is peaked. It's 30 hours in and my interest was peaked before this, but like the fact that she's there and she is playing such a role as she is great. And I like the characters, the, you know, the NPCs that you get are interesting in a way that I wouldn't have expected them to be. Like, they continue to hit it out of the park with your companions. My favorite one right now, and you know, people who consider me insufferable are going to say, oh, of course, you're a narcissist. But, like, the NPC, his name is Cole. And he's a rogue that you can that you can recruit, but he is actually a spirit from the Fade, which is like the magical other realm, who has manifested in real life without possessing somebody, but he is a spirit of compassion. And he's kind of like K-Pax. He goes around and he has immediate insight into the pains and struggles that people feel. And even though he is like your assassin type character, that is only because he is, you know, he goes in and fixes people's problems and he makes them forget him. So he, you know, is good.
I go in and fix people's problems by killing people.
Well, I mean, like that is one way it can be compassionate, and that's a complicated part of his character, and that's like an establishing moment for him. Ben,
sounds
what's
like
the,
a real Ender Wiggin.
Kinda. Ben, what's the good point?
They haven't made a K-Pax the game yet, and Spacey already has sunglasses on and that, so you could easily insert guns into his hands, no problem.
K-Pax the game. But he's so great because, like, you know, so much of what's great about having companions in these games is the incidental dialogue, right? And so if you have him in your party, and even though I'm playing a rogue, you know, who is short range and he is a short range rogue, I want to have him in my party so he can, you know, say this stuff, but like, he will give a read and he speaks entirely in poetry about like the pain and like the joy that people felt in this particular place. So like, it's so good. Like
you're an empath.
Kind of like he straight up is an empath because he is literally a spirit of compassion, and it's really cool to have him around. And, you know, like Dorian is pretty great too. Like he's a defector from Tevinter. So even though he should be like evil and decadent, he's just kind of a solid bro who is, you know, like willing to help you out. Like all of them are great. Even your, you know, just like I wouldn't have expected, but like your non-playable advisor characters are all really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like all of that stuff is great. I just wish I didn't have to do so much bullshit. Like I honestly went and checked out the DLC to see if there was like just a buy 60 power thing. Just like, okay, I'll give you an extra $20 just so I don't have to play your fucking game. And I even, I even bumped the combat difficulty down to casual because I don't want to have to like grind. Like the act of combat is still fun when it's on casual because you're still making the decisions, but it's not punishing you for not being entirely, you know, on top of managing your gear.
Yeah. This sounds like a real bummer, dude. I didn't really run into the power walls because I was doing all the secondary quests, and so when I eventually would get to the main quest, I think I had cleared it by then, but I wouldn't recommend that route. So
yeah, it's because I'm trying to rush, and it's because like aside from like the one or two, like every major area you go to has like a reclaim this keep or this town kind of quest alongside it. And those are pretty good, but that isn't enough to get you over those power walls.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, I think what they were trying for was really cool, where it's like each map's a different world, and they were trying to make these kind of very modular type of missions that you could do with any sort of world.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are kind of interesting, like the Astro Globes or whatever, as like their equivalent of like climbing a tower in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so some of those are kind of interesting, and you know, there's a little bit of substance to them, but yeah, it feels like a lot of it is running around and fetching plants or picking up items and then returning and completing a quest. So.
I have no interest in the crafting. I have no interest in, you know, even just like the shards. Like this is basically if Rare made an RPG.
Mm.
it's Donkey Kong 64, the RPG, the Konganing.
Mm.
I would buy Donkey Kong RPG.
Oh man, but like don't let my like shittiness about this like lead you to believe that I'm not having fun with the game. Like I just completed a quest where you're like going around at an Orlesian ball, you know, like and there's all kind of like intrigue around it. Like that's great because it, you know, there was combat, but it was kind of hidden off in the corners and it came up at a really appropriate time. I wish more of the game was like that, which isn't to say that the combat oriented stuff, you know, it's like the combat stuff when you're actually in the main quest, it feels paced like a Mass Effect game, which is what I want. That's how I want story delivered. It's getting me excited for The Witcher 3 because from what I understand, they eschew a bunch of that kind of like randomly generated collect X number of Y in favor of more bespoke kind of content.
It's kind of they do the same thing, and then like halfway through there's like a soul crushing more choice.
Which I want.
With The Witcher 3, there's definitely a formula with The Witcher 3 missions, but it's a good formula where it's like you start on a mission thinking one thing, then there's a turn, then there's another turn, then the mission's over.
my only problem with The Witcher 3 so far is I don't know enough about the background politics to make informed decisions yet.
There are good YouTube videos. I've decided I'm not going to play The Witcher 1 or 2. But I've been looking at like, here's what you need to know in order to like get the most out of this.
Yeah. Sure. I would recommend that as well.
Yeah.
The Witcher, the Primer 3.
Yep. Prime, the movie with Gwyneth Paltrow and Michael Caine. I think I forget who was in Prime.
Has there been a Witcher movie yet? I feel like that's inevitable.
Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
I'm sure somebody has probably taken all of the CGI cutscenes and put them together into one thing.
True.
Yeah. But yeah, that is everything that I've played so far. I think I'm going to try and finish it up this week. But you guys want to button it up?
Yeah,
sure.
The credit. That was level number 112. Still trying to get used to that triple digit kind of thing. Let's look here and see what we would like people to do. I want to get those Facebook numbers up. We are behind other shows on the network, and I like having that number grow. So that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Also, ratings and reviews in iTunes are super helpful. People who've been offering encouraging words, I really appreciate it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. This is a joy to do, and I only hope that it is at least one third as fun for you to listen to as it is to make. Other than that, is there anything that I'm missing?
Tell a friend.
Yes, please. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Myersmith at Myersmith777
on Twitter. And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for the title.
You know, I just realized that Ben is probably due for another tweet soon.
Oh, he probably is. Wow. Let's see here.
My tweeting days are behind me, guys.
You out the game.
I'm rusty.
So, wait a minute.
How
no.
do you tweet?
What are tweet? No, you're not due until August. You had one in February that I missed. CS joke of the did day. I? Why did the protected variable go to jail? Because it exposes itself to children.
See, David gets it. Justifies it.
Yeah. I mean, it is dark, but that is fine. Let's see here. What are we gonna do? So I will lay out mine, and if you all have any that you want to throw in, let's throw them in as well. Schrodinger's GIF.
You mean Jife?
Yep. I mean Glyph. David SEO. Place the game. The Kongening.
Ooh. I think Schrodinger's GIF is where it's at.
Okay.
Yeah, I would throw in cell shading.
Oh yeah. Cell shading's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Dennis, how do you feel about cell shading?
I'm down for that too.
Okay. All right. Well, game day decision.
As a side note, what is SEO?
Search engine optimization. So when we were talking about a like martial arts dungeon, like if somebody was trying to find David in a search engine, they would probably put that in and they would find you. Or if you're just searching for what you like, then you would probably find that game or that song. So I wasn't insulting you.
No problem.